Welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Personalize your hydration strategy today at precisionhydration.com with electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. You can try a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Hope you're all doing good. Hope you're all enjoying December time. I think there's not been a huge amount of racing going on recently this weekend. All I managed to find from around the world was the fairly cool race, actually, Challenge Daytona. I'm sure some of you will have seen this on the internet or will have seen it on the actual Facebook Live coverage. It was pretty good. Swim in the lake in the middle of the Daytona racetrack stadium. So apparently they dug this out to make the banking for the track itself and then filled it with water, or water filled it. And so everybody got to swim in there, and it was timed so that the pro race happened and finished under the lights. It was pretty cool, actually. Unusual distance event. It was a 1 mile swim. It was a 37.5 mile bike, and it was an 8.2 mile run. So multiple laps around the actual stadium itself, 15 laps on the bike and 2 laps on the run. And firstly, hats off, notable performance here from Andy Starkowitz, who ended up finishing in fourth. He broke 30 miles an hour on the bike, which is some going. So he ran 1:14:43, but unfortunately, I saw in the post-race interviews, both him, Lionel Sanders, and Pablo de Piena Gonzalez all got sent the wrong way coming out of transition. So it ended up costing Starkey third place overall. So overall results here, we had on the men's side, Lionel Sanders took the win in 2:32 from Pablo de Piena Gonzalez, who was, 2:23, and Pablo was about 30 seconds back. They had a brilliant side-by-side battle, and it looked like Gonzalez really took the fight to Sanders in this one. There was lots of surges. Sanders was just desperately trying to hang on. Gonzalez said afterwards he didn't think he was going to have the endurance in him, so he tried to use his sprint distance speed to surge on him. And Lionel said afterwards, you know, this guy put 8 surges on me. It was like flat out sprinting each time. But fair play to him, man. His training isn't aimed at that kind of stuff at all. And he managed to hang on and ended up putting a surge in about 3/4 of the way through to take the win. Third place was Jason West. He was 2:27. And fourth, we already mentioned Andy Starkowitz there. And then back in eighth, we had Rhys Barkley managed to take a top 10. So well done there. Over on the women's side, we had another similar great battle going on. The win was taken by Paula Finley from Canada ahead of Lucy Charles Barkley in second and Lisa Norden in third. All three of them pretty much came onto the run together, and Paula Finley put a surge in about halfway through. So with a lap to go in the run, managed to take the win. So it's another good week there. Paula Findlay and Lionel Sanders both won 70.3 Indian Wells last week. So cracking racing from them. All right, this week on the show, we've got a great interview for you. We've got an interview with Precision Hydration sponsored athlete, Carrie Lester. She recently took the win over Ironman Cozumel. She's had a great year. You'll hear in the interview, she wasn't expecting to go as well as she did at Cozumel, and she ended up going 8:38, which is very impressive indeed at the end of the year. Cozumel's not renowned for being a fast course, or at the very least, it's renowned for being extremely windy. And it sounds like they didn't get those windy conditions this year. And it turned out to be a very fast day indeed. So without further ado, over to this week's interview of the week. All right. So Carrie Lester, it's a great pleasure to welcome you onto the show. Thanks very much for agreeing to join us. It is, well, it's the crack of dawn, isn't it, where you are right now? God bless you. And you're recovering.
The sun is just coming up.
Beautiful. Well, I can hear you getting your second coffee there. We'll give the listeners the background into this. You dropped me a line a couple of days ago and you said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm recovering from being sick and I'm not quite there, ready for an interview. So are you feeling better first? That's the first part of the interview, to check in with you.
I am, Rob. First, thanks for having me on the show with you this morning. It's a great opportunity to be able to speak to people and kind of tell a bit of my story. So thanks for having me. And the second part, yes, I am feeling better. I still might feel like I'm, what's the show, The Nanny? I don't remember her name. Fran Drescher, I might still sound like her, but I'm on the mend. So thank you.
Do you think, was it the effort of Cozumel that kind of pushed you over the edge at the end of the season, do you think? Because we should start this by saying, obviously, congratulations on the win at Cozumel. 8:38 was a storming performance to end out the year you've had, wasn't it?
It was, unexpected. I didn't really know what was going to happen, you know, in that race. I didn't know what, how I was going to feel when the gun went off. You know, was everyone is kind of a bit on the same page, you know, when they're racing an Ironman after Hawaii. They're, you know, they're probably physically they're still there, but mentally it's, you know, how there are they at the race and are they ready to hurt? Am I ready to hurt? Like I didn't know what was going to happen, which way it was going to go. But I think it was just a fast day generally all around. I've been in Cozumel as a spectator in other years and they've had some, you know, pretty gnarly winds out there on the bike, which can obviously really affect the bike times there. And I think we got lucky this year. We didn't have, you know, any real extreme conditions out there. So I think everyone, like overall, it was a pretty fast day for the Cozumel. But having said that, at that time of year, I didn't think that I was still capable of going that fast.
It's a real interesting question, that one, is it? Because obviously Cozumel, as you say, it's renowned for being super windy and really exposed to the elements. And on a year when the wind doesn't blow, it turns itself out to be a very, very fast course. But it's surprising that you can go so quick on the bounce back from such an epic performance at Kona, when you'd imagine everyone's kind of, you know, it's like the end of the season party, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'm honestly, you know, I think I got lucky there where, you know, the girls that I was racing, you know, they were a lot of them were on the back of Hawaii or, you know, everyone's at end of season races. And I just think we're all out there racing together. We're all probably tired and it was just a matter of survival on that course. But everyone was going quickly. You know, I actually thought for a second, I was hoping to have more of a gap off the bike because I didn't know how much energy I had in me to run, you know, another marathon. And I was hoping, you know, like I said, for more of a gap off the bike, but I didn't get it. The girls were right there the whole way. So, you know, they kept coming at me. And I just tried to hold strong and, you know, they had great days as well. But I think, you know, on that run, we were all feeling the pain. It's just a matter of survival. I could see the look on everyone's faces and, you know, yeah, it's brutal.
So the season you've had this year, let's review it. You've ended up with wins at Ironman France, at Ironman Mont-Tremblant. You were eighth overall in Kona and then rounded out the year with a win in Cozumel. So, am I right in saying, do you consider it to be your best season ever?
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, I was, you know, after Mont-Tremblant thinking, well, Scotty was, you know, telling me that, you know, you have had an unbelievable year, Kaz. Like, even if you go to Hawaii and, you know, you don't race that well, like, you've won two Ironmans. And, you know, that in itself for me has been almost, you know, one of my career years.
Yeah.
You know, without adding the rest of the year. I just those races, you know, other than France this year, Mont-Tremblant and Cozumel particularly, you know, they weren't planned races. We just kind of went with the flow of the season and where I was at training wise, where I felt like I wanted to race, what course I thought, you know, I would do well over, and we just went for it. So we really were very flexible in race scheduling this year. We just went for it, and it's been. I would be just amazed and I'm in absolute shock if I was sitting here with you again next year, you know, talking about the same thing. You know, if it happens again in 2020, this is. I don't think I could repeat this.
you still sound like you're in a little bit of shock, actually, because from my point of view, I'm looking at you and going, well, you're getting stronger and stronger every year that goes by, and you'll probably be even stronger and maybe get four wins next year.
Well, I mean, I feel like I'm at the strongest point, you know, in my career. It's I'm 39 in January, and I don't ever, you know, I haven't placed a kind of an end date on this yet. I know it'll come, you know, if I obviously want to start a family. So that's the ticking time bomb. But, you know, I feel so strong right now. And, yeah, I don't see, you know, me giving this up in 2020, but whether I can repeat, you know, just one Ironman win, I don't know. I certainly think I can, given my kind of strength at the moment. And if I chose the right race, I think it's doable. But, God, like I take each year at the moment and I just think, you know, if I am able to win another Ironman in this year, like that's a good year. It's just the level of racing with the women at the moment, it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard to win an Ironman.
Yeah.
And you tell me I win three and I say, yeah, whatever. Nice one.
And it also seems like
unbelievable.
You don't make life easy for yourself because you pick the hardest races out there. Yeah, look at Montreux.
I seem to pick the hottest ones.
Yeah, well, it was absolutely baking in France this year, wasn't it? Was this the year when
it was,
did they cut
was
it
ridiculous.
Short? Do I remember that right? Uh-huh. Was it like in the 40s in centigrade?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. It was brutal.
Yeah.
The good thing about France is that on the bike, because you do ride up to elevation and you're out kind of, you are at some elevation for a good portion of the bike, you do get a little bit of reprieve from that heat.
Yeah.
So it's not so bad. But when you do come back into town to run on the promenade, even for the last hour of the bike as you're descending back into town, I mean, you can just feel the heat, you know, as you're going through the mountains there. It's like you're just dropping into a sauna.
it's stifling, isn't it? That section of the run that goes out, especially I found, you know, the section out by the airport where there's concrete on both sides of you. It's like running through some kind of hideous sun magnifying place, isn't it?
Right. And in June when we raced there, they hadn't finished doing the pavement. So down near the airport there, the pavement was even hotter. They hadn't finished the promenade. So whatever stage what they were at, it was like you're running in. It was like 45, 50 degrees down there. It was hideous.
Oh, man. Well, going well in heat like that that's obviously, it's a big part of the puzzle, isn't it, of racing well in Kona, is being able to handle the heat and humidity of the environment, much less the tactics and racing at the high level you need to. Did that give you a lot of confidence going into Kona this year?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I've never really felt like I've had a problem sort of racing in the heat in Hawaii, and definitely mentally kind of just adapting and physically adapting to the heat. You know, I've raced and trained and grown up in that kind of, you know, in the Australian summers my whole life. So it's not unfamiliar. And then, you know, whenever we've gone over to Hawaii in the last few years, I've always felt like, you know, it's not as hot as people make it out to be. It is, I guess, if you're coming from those extreme, you know, those cold places, or if you're coming from an Australian winter, yeah, sure, you're probably going to feel the heat. But, yeah, it's just something I've never really struggled with to the point that it's affected my performance. I definitely feel the heat at points and I'm like, man, it's hot. But it's never, you know, sucked me out of racing. Now I've never felt that I've really struggled with it on the marathon. So definitely, I mean, I just keep throwing myself into those hot races. I don't know if it's that I enjoy it. I think it's just something that I guess mentally I can wrap my head around.
So you've always felt quite comfortable racing in the heat. I think you're right. I think if you grow up in that kind of hot environment and you're used to training in it, it's very different to, I remember landing at Kona Airport and wanting to get straight back onto the plane for the air conditioning, not even managing to walk across the tarmac, because it was, you know, coming from England, you get cooked before you even get into the shade.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, a lot of where things go wrong a lot of time for people in Hawaii is they do maybe neglect the fact that they have been exposed to that heat, you know, maybe up to a week. Some, you know, a lot of people fly in a week or so before, or only 5 days before, but you're exposed to that heat, you know, every day before you race. And if you're not used to being exposed to that, obviously, you know, you forget things like your, you know, your salt intake, and you're out in the heat all the time. You're just out on your feet. You just don't realize the effect that it has. And then you go and race, and all of a sudden you think, oh, it's just the heat affected me on race day. Well, maybe not.
Yeah.
It's probably the fact that, you know, you cooked before you even got out there. But I don't know. Yeah, it affects people differently, I think.
Do you know what? There's a really good clip of that. And the, I don't know if you've seen the Zwift Tri Academy videos that they put out, but there's a bit where they all go down to collect the race bags, and they're kind of hanging around outside. And one of them says, oh my God, we've got to get in the air conditioning. It's just, it's too hot to be alive here, you know? And you're thinking, yeah. Wow, you've got a race in that tomorrow. It's, yeah, it's a challenging environment just to be alive in, I think.
It is. Mexico is just the same.
Was it as hot and humid in Mexico at the Cosmo race, do you think?
I mean, I really felt the heat there for sure. I think it was as bad. Maybe, you know, we got a few more chances for some shade on the run, but overall it was just as hot and humid. I mean, I was baking. I felt like I was baking. I remember saying, I saw Rinnie out there on the run course. She was there supporting. And I remember screaming out to her that, you know, it was hotter than, I felt like it was hotter than Hawaii. I had my top unzipped and I was going for the ice and water and anything I could at the aid stations. Or I don't know if it was hotter or it was just that I just had enough.
Well, tell us about your race at Kona this year then, because obviously to finish top 10, great result. You're right up there. But what we don't see in the race results is, you know, we sit here and we look at splits. We don't get to tell how the race actually played out. And sitting and looking at it, it looks to me like you got out of the water in the pack with Anne Howe, with Sarah Crowley, with that group of riders who all rode along sort of behind the Lucy Charles kind of area. But what were the dynamics like when you were actually out there riding? Did you manage to put a little break in at any point, or how was that for you?
Firstly, the swim for me was the swim that I always wanted to have at Hawaii. For the last few years, I've been off the back of that group by a couple of minutes, and it's been frustrating because I know that I've been able to swim with that group.
Yeah.
And this year when we went off, I actually didn't realize I was in the group. I thought, you know, I'd miss the start again. And then I realized I was in the group and I was like, yes, like it was unbelievable. I was like, oh, I was so happy because I thought I'd miss the group. And then I found myself there and I was like, okay, Kaz, this is going to be the day.
Yeah.
And then I got out on the bike and it was great. And then about 30 minutes in, I made the fatal mistake of dropping my gel bottle.
So heartbreak.
That was the first kind of heartbreak. But I guess I was at that point where I've managed so many sessions in training that I've been riding on empty. Like I had a plan. I thought, okay. My biggest mistake was not putting an extra flask in my special needs. That's number one mistake. But the plan was to just make up whatever I could at aid stations, take the gels, take the food, whatever I could, just make up what I lost in the bottle.
Okay.
So unfortunately for me, though, on the bike, I ended up finding myself in the group with I was still in the group with Sarah and Anne. And I think we had Imogen Simmons in there as well, maybe one other. So I was still there in the group, but my plan, my strategy of possibly being able to ride away from that group was shot when I dropped that bottle. And the plan was to just do my best to stay with the group while managing, you know, getting the extra fuel and bottles and things at aid stations. It was great. I had a great bike ride. I was able to stay with the girls. It was it was difficult at times where I felt like I was in real kind of trouble with my nutrition, or I was going through aid stations trying to grab things and then missed a, you know, they kind of gapped me and then I had to catch back up. So it was not the bike ride I planned on having, but I still had a great ride. You know, I've never, it was cool being out there in that group and actually seeing my name on the whiteboard.
Yeah, yeah.
For once, you know, that was like another cool thing because just I always thought that I had a place in that group. I've just never been able to show it. So I was really happy that even though things were going horribly wrong for me on the nutrition front, that I was holding it together and just trying to stay with that group and still be able to have a good ride. So I think that was, yeah, it was great. It was showed myself, I think, that I have a lot of confidence.
Because Kona's a tough bike course, isn't it? It's not renowned as a tough bike course, but, you know, you don't hear people compare it to Lanzarote or France or wherever, but it's a very tough bike course, and I would think it would really suit someone with your strength on the bike.
It's funny you say that because, you know, over the last few years, Scott and I, you know, we race a lot in Europe and we race some really difficult bike courses. And, you know, I've never really given Kona the respect that it deserves. You know, I've always thought, you know, compared to those races, that bike course, you know, that it's not that hard. But yeah, it's really hard. It's just, you have to pay attention. You just don't get a lot of rest in the course at all. Because of obviously whatever's happening with the wind at certain courses.
Yeah.
At certain places on the course. And then as you get closer out to Kauai and Harvey, then you're starting to approach the hills, which then you also have more wind, and it's just, yeah, it's just a beast of a course. It's different every day. And then when we're out there racing as well, we're incorporating real race dynamics where, you know, most of the races that we do over there in Europe, you're out there on your own. So that element is taken out. You don't really have to worry about anyone else other than yourself. So it's, you know, I've given it a whole new level of respect.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I imagine that sort of when you go to the World Championships at Kona, all of a sudden it isn't a solo time trial like it is for you in other races. There are, you know, as you've said, there were three or four other women around you. You've got, I mean, you're there, you're in the group that's racing in second place on the road, so there's that excitement. But do you find that there are different tactics come into play when you're in a group like that as opposed to when you're just sort of out in the lead on your own?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, when you're in Hawaii, you have, you know, you're in a group of five or eight girls and all of those girls have a different race plan. So if someone, you know, and this year I saw it, you know, we had Daniela caught us, Daniela Blymouth caught us on the bike, maybe at 100 miles or a little further into the ride, and she wanted to go off the front. And then, of course, you know, our pace of riding suddenly lifted to a pace that I wasn't so comfortable with, given what I was dealing with. So, you know, you've got to make that decision. Well, do I go or do I stay? And I'm not used to that. Because, yeah, you're racing out there on your own a lot in those races that I just mentioned. And then all of a sudden I've got, you know, another five girls with me. And, you know, you've got to keep coming up with new strategies all of the time and adapting to them and being okay with it. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, you've got to be okay with it. If I go, then, okay, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Or what's likely to happen? And then am I cool with that too? Am I going to be able to handle that? So, I mean, for me, it was, okay, well, if I go too hard here and I'm not, you know, I'm still dealing with, you know, being probably low on calories, then what's going to happen? Am I going to be able to run? what's the possible scenario. So yeah, it's adapting to those strategies of the other girls that, you know, are going to affect your race.
What would your nutrition strategy have been what was in your bottle when you dropped it? How many calories did you have on you?
I have XRCL gels in those bottles, and I mix some precision hydration salt tablets into them.
Good old pH.
I'd lost my salt. I'd lost about 600 or more calories of, you know, the XRCL. Yeah. But for me, it was the confidence of that nutrition is what I race on. It's what I can stomach. It's what works for me. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm forced to take, you know, gels that I've never taken before. And then I'd also lost salt. I did have a little bit of backup salt, but not, you know, probably not enough. So it wasn't that hard to make up, but then there was issues, you know, where I was missing the gel handoffs at the aid stations because they weren't, you know, the volunteers, it was only like one gel stop. And if you missed that, then that was it for your whole station. So it was, you know, there were a lot I missed. Like I couldn't get access to them. So,
It looks like there's we saw this a lot, particularly at the front of the men's race, which is where a lot of the cameras were focused. There's a lot of racing goes on and dynamics seem to happen with other athletes as you go through a station to put pressure on each other, it looks like, because it's easy to kind of go, well, just slow down a bit and pick up the nutrition you need. But it was obvious watching it. Some people were looking around and going, right, you know, Jan dropped a bottle at the last station. We're really gonna hammer through this aid station. Is that a really big challenge when you're out there and sort of, you know, you've made this second pack swim that you've always wanted. You're out there essentially in the front group, aren't you? And you're exactly where you want to be. But the pressure goes on every time you go through an aid station.
Yeah. I didn't realize it as much, you know. I mean, Hawaii, it's magnified. You know, when you're in a group of girls or guys, yeah, you have to, I mean, it's a funny thing because you don't want people go through aid stations obviously in front of you and they drop bottles. You don't want to roll over the bottle and then, you know, cause a pile up behind you. So there's an element where you're trying to approach an aid station cautiously. But then I didn't realize, of course, that, okay, well, maybe there's a strategy here, like people actually do hammer through these aid stations. I wasn't one to do it. Other girls did it. They would hammer through. And then, yeah, of course, you know, they gap us or me or whoever's, you know, lagging behind in an aid station.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's obviously a strategy that, you know, I think probably more in the men's race. I don't think we see it that much in the women's racing. Definitely more in the men's. But it's, yeah, I mean, people use those opportunities to get a gap.
It is much more, it's racing, isn't it?
You've got to be paying attention.
Yeah.
You have to be paying attention in the group. So you've got to try and get your stuff and get out of there as fast as you can.
So
safely. It's a challenge.
Yeah, I bet. You get to the end of the bike ride then, and it looks like from the time on the tracks, it looks like the group has grown to probably double the size, I'd imagine, by the end of the bike ride. How aware were you of the people around you getting off the bike at that point?
I knew everyone was there. I think we picked up Laura, Philip.
I'm trying to see. Did you have Heather Jackson
Daniella
with you as well? And Daniella, yeah.
Daniella Blymouth.
Had Daniella Reef ridden up to you at this point?
No.
Right,
no,
okay,
she didn't catch us at all on the bike. I think we did have Heather close. Heather, it might have been, was close only a few minutes back. And that was about it, maybe one other that was kind of close. But we had quite a good-sized group get off the bike.
And how did you feel?
There was about four or five of us off the bike together.
Yeah.
And that was – that was good. I mean, I thought, okay, you know, I was telling myself the same thing, you know, all race, this is it, you know, you're exactly where you wanted to be. So just, you know, let's go. but of course I got off running and I thought, yeah, I don't feel so great.
Oh no.
Definitely low on calories, definitely low on salt, definitely low on everything. But I still felt okay. You know, I'd felt worse. I've got off running in Hawaii last year and collapsed, you know, not long, you know, into the run. So I thought, you know, I felt worse before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just get going, get the fluid in, get the gels in, and then, you know, just get out to the Queen K. And that was the plan. I knew I had, you know, I was off with Sarah Crowley, Laura Phillip, you know, all a couple of good runners. So I wasn't going to chase them. It was a matter of I had to pretty much go into damage control quickly when I got off the bike. So the plan was to just find my own rhythm and hopefully kind of come good. But yeah, it was like I said, it was, you know, a dream being up there, you know, in that top five off the bike. I think I just want to be able to hold that position.
Do you think in retrospect, how much of a big part in it did the lack of calories play, do you think?
A pretty significant part. I think overall in the bike, you know, I think originally, you know, I was thinking, oh, I would try and maybe ride away in that last kind of, you know, 40 or 60 kilometers. But at the end of the day, you know, in retrospect, I don't think I would have. I think I would have just stayed in that group, just knowing the caliber of the group, the runners, you know, I would have reassessed that strategy, but I think it definitely played a part on the run.
I
could feel that I just didn't have that strength and kind of spark in my legs that I had, for example, in Mont Tremblant. That was a run that, you know, I got off running there and felt like, you know, I wanted it too. It's the first time I've got off and I've, you know, I thought, man, this is exactly how I want a marathon to feel like. But yeah, Kona does funny things, you know. Maybe I'll never be able to feel like I feel like my run there. But definitely played a part.
It's
on
nice
that run in Hawaii. I was always
together
in kind of damage control. I was always at that, always in that damage control. You just never make it up.
It was an incredibly stacked field when we look at the finishing times. Like 3.5 minutes faster would have had you in fifth place. So
yes, I know.
It obviously came right down to the wire, didn't it? How did the racing play out on the road during the back end of the marathon?
There was some just shifts in the last kind of 8 or so kilometers, maybe not even. I think that for me, Heather caught me out on the run and that was kind of it, sitting in fifth. She was then sitting in fifth. So I was in about sixth place, but yeah, dropped a couple of places in that last, you know, 8 kilometers I was spent. Definitely that was where the fueling got me. You just get to that point where you've got nothing left. It's weak.
Just
like
to the finish line, isn't
it?
Yeah.
Out of your legs. Yeah. It's just complete weakness. Mentally, I kind of still felt okay. But I was just felt like I was just capped at that effort. You know, just couldn't go any harder.
Bless you.
So that's cool.
I tell you what, though, if you can finish eighth in Kona on a day when you've dropped your bottle and the calories are gone and you're only a few minutes away from fifth, especially after the year that you've had, it's got to be a confidence boost going into next year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I do keep reminding myself of that. I'm a terrible one for looking back at that and just, you know, thinking, oh, God, like only 3.5 minutes, like I'm so angry. Like, you know, I have to get over that anger with myself. But it was just a mistake that I made. I chose the way that I dealt with it. So I can't be angry and just, like you said, yeah, look at it and know that on a terrible day, you know, I was still able to deliver that, you know, and be happy with that. So yeah, I am. There's always that element though. It's just like that, what if, it's always there.
Yeah.
But that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. Could have been worse.
That's what gets you out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to swim practice, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Who out of the female pro field really impressed you on that day?
Oh, many. Lucy, you know, I thought, you know, this year with Daniela having a day, you know, she had an off day, just the strength of Lucy, you know, she's 3 years, you know, she's been out there fighting for the win and, you know, settled for second, but just fighting for it. Always impresses. Laura Phillip, impressive. First Ironman, Hawaii. Just to be able to ride up there, you know, with those girls and you know, fourth place. Incredible. Yeah. But, you know, the ones that impressed me, you know, Lindsay Corbin, always fighting away, you know, to get into that top 10. She's always there. Heather, fighting away, you know, back into the field and getting off and being able to run into fifth. You know, just these girls, you know, I've been racing them for a long time. Well, not obviously Laura and Lucy, but you know, Heather, Lindsay, Meredith, you know, all the girls that I've been racing for, you know, for years that are still fighting their way, you know, to get into that top 10 in Hawaii, they impress me every year. And it gets harder and harder to, you know, physically and mentally do, you know, what we do. And, yeah, they're very impressive.
And what were your thoughts on Anne Haug's run?
Blistering. Just incredible. Like, incredible.
Did it look like, I mean, she was running as fast as she looked on the telly when she came by?
No, well, I don't think anyone does. I don't think, I think the only person, you know, that I've ever seen absolutely look like they were smoking it out there is Rennie, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing to watch always. But no, I mean, no one looked like they were running like super quick, but just out of this world, isn't it?
Yeah, an amazing performance.
Yeah.
Well, how difficult is it to make a living as a pro triathlete these days? How much, I'm always interested in sort of how much you can sort of be supported by sponsors and how much you have to earn a part-time living doing things like your coaching. How difficult is it to make a living even when you know, you're operating at the very highest level and you're up there in the top eight in the world at the World Championships?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, it's difficult. You know, I'm 15 years into the sport and, you know, I definitely can't retire. definitely can't retire anytime soon. But, yeah, no, it is difficult. You know, a lot of races today, you know, they pay, you know, maybe top eight, some races top six, some eight, some tenth. But, you know, if you're basically out of the, you know, the top three of a lot of those races, the money that you're actually racing for sometimes can barely cover the cost of the race.
Yeah.
So it's the prize money is difficult, particularly in you know, in the Ironman races. There's a lot of races outside of, you know, Ironman that have really good money, and that's why, you know, Scott and I have both raced, you know, in Europe a lot over the last few summers, because there's opportunities that have been given to us, you know, races like Umbraman that provide really good prize money. So it's difficult to make a living if you're focused solely on, you know, just those Ironman races and just racing in Hawaii, because it's no secret if you finish outside of the top 10 in Hawaii, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
So
that's hard, isn't it?
And that, you know, throws a whole other element in as well. If you're finishing at that point, you know, it becomes difficult with getting sponsors. You know, yeah. We're all fighting over the same sponsors, and that just makes it difficult just to make a living when that's kind of all you focus on. So I think if you're a well-rounded athlete and if you're racing around the world, and if you can, you know, if you pick races, obviously sometimes that you're not throwing all of your eggs into one basket, that being Kona, then, you know, there is opportunity out there to make money. I don't know if, you know, if it's going to be money that you can retire on, but it's certainly, you know, it's, you know, Scott and I, we do okay. And we race all year. That's one of the other things, you know, we race all year. You have to, if you're not, you know, finishing on the podium, I guess, in Hawaii, then, I mean, that's not, I'm not saying that that's what you have to do to make money all year, but
yeah.
You know, if you race all year and you race around the world, you pick races outside of Hawaii, outside of Ironman, if you have some modest paying sponsors, then you can make a good living.
Well, let's give a shout out to your sponsors as well, because I know how important it is to them. Who have you had on board as sponsors this year?
We have had Canyon. We are riding with Canyon, and we'll be riding with them as well for the next couple of years.
You're on the sweet Speedmax, aren't you?
We're on the it's an amazing bike.
Yeah,
I think, you know, one of the biggest changes for me as well, you know, in the last 12 to 18 months is actually being comfortable riding on a time trial bike. So that's been great having them as a sponsor and just really just being comfortable on a bike. So we've had Canyon, Vision, FSA has been a great partner for the last few years. We continue with them as well. Ecoy, XRCell is our nutrition sponsor, as well as Precision Hydration. Castelli make the best suits, obviously, training gear. Blue 70, ISM. So we have great relationships with our sponsors. They're the best support. I mean, we can't thank them enough.
Nice. Oh, that's really good. And there's one final thing I want to ask you about before we wrap this up. I read a little note somewhere, I can't remember where, but is this true? As a youngster, you were actually, and like talk about of all the ways to get into like the long distance endurance sport, you were a track sprinter and you've run 11.7 for 100 meters and 23.9 for 200. Is that right?
That's right.
Wow.
A long time ago.
And did you go to the Olympic trials in 2000?
I did in Sydney.
Wow.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, that's a very different trajectory into the sport than the classic like kid who was a swimmer. To come from a pure slow twitch, good enough to be considered as pure fast twitch, good enough to be considered for the Olympics kind of background, to end up top eight in Kona, that's an amazing trajectory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny because every now and then I will get a message from my old track coach, and you know, he says the same thing, because he saw me on the track many a times. He was always trying to push me to run the 400. He was like, your 400 is your event. And I never wanted to do it. The pain of the 400 was just unbelievable. I think he made me run one at a track meet once, and I will never forget the pain when I hit 300 and ran that final straight. It was nothing I'd ever felt before. So I was like, that is it. I'm not doing it. I hate it. So, you know, from someone that never wanted to run, you know, any further than the 200. Yeah, the adaption has been, well, it's been interesting long, particularly for the marathon. I think the sprint speed has, the legs, I still have the sprinter's legs. They definitely help my cycling for sure, but it's been a process you know, building all of the systems up to run that marathon. But Scott, you know, my partner and my coach, has been very patient and observed me, and he's, I guess, figured it out with me. So, yeah, amazing.
Well, it just goes to show, doesn't it? You never know. You should never be told you're either this kind of person or that kind of person, and you can never do this or that, because there is no way someone from a 100 meters background like that should be able to excel according to traditional wisdom. And I love it when you hear stories like this.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I go to the track now, and I always laugh to myself, you know, when we're running 200s, you know, I think, man, I'm a good, you know, almost 20 seconds. You know, it's crazy.
Oh, I love it.
What you would run, I'd have no chance now in running that. I'd probably, you know, tear a hamstring for sure. Two hamstrings.
Oh, that's always the challenge, isn't it? You've got this memory of how fast you used to be able to run. Oh. And yeah, no, let's keep away from sprinting, Kerry.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen,
gone.
Thank you so much for your time coming on the show. It's been great to talk to you. We'll let you go so you can get your swim training in, but congratulations on your year this year. Off to the pool. Love it. So great interview there with Kerry Lester. Really good to see her getting some good results there. 3 wins in a year is very impressive stuff indeed. And yeah, we mentioned there she's sponsored by Precision Hydration, so it's a perfect time to give a shout out to them. If you've not tried Precision Hydration yet, you can get yourself some electrolytes that match exactly how you sweat. What do we mean by that? Well, what we mean is everybody sweats at a different rate, so the amount of sweat comes out is different for everybody, and also the saltiness of your sweat, so the amount of electrolytes in a given volume of your sweat is different. So for me, I'm an extremely salty sweater, so I have to use their Precision Hydration 1500 milligram sachets. That's great for me because until they came along, I was having hideous problems with both cramp and with hyponatremia, and especially hot races. So for me, during this winter treadmill and turbo training season, I've got to get on it on every session. Otherwise, my calves cramp up like you wouldn't believe. And magically, if I take Precision Hydration, I don't get any cramps. So for me, it's a no-brainer. It's like Dumbo's feather. I've got to take it. It does the job it's sent there for. So if you're like me and you're finding yourself really struggling with cramps during indoor training, then you can get on it. If you've never tried it before, you can get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT. And you can also take their free online sweat test over at precisionhydration.com. All you've got to do is answer a few questions, and it will give you a really good lead as to whether you are a particularly heavy volume sweater or a very salty sweater. Okay, so one last thing to mention before we finish. If you're looking for last-minute Christmas gifts, we've got some gift cards for OXYGENADDICT.com available. There's a link in the show notes, and they're redeemable against any of our coaching services. So coach consultations, online video swim analysis, even our team coaching packages. So if you're looking for something for somebody to buy you, we're happy for you to combine bunches of different gift cards against prices of anything you might want to buy. All right, everybody, thank you very much for listening today. Thanks again to our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. And remember, if you're looking for triathlon coaching, you can check us out over at teamoxygenetic.com as well. We're going to have some special offers running in January, so keep your eyes open for those. And remember, there's a link in the show notes for all of the things we've mentioned, so you don't have to remember them. So until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm going to be back with a fantastic interview next week with Talbot Cox, who is a great photographer and videographer and makes videos for Lionel Sanders, Tim and Rinny, Gwen Jorgensen. He's got some amazing inside stories, and it was a brilliant interview that I did with him recently. I'm going to put that out next week, and it's going to come out, I think, the day before Christmas Eve. So you've got something to listen to over Christmas there. Yeah, good stuff. So I am Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the OXYGENADDICT Triathlon Podcast. Until next week, see ya.